Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series, by OSCA Wellness, the coolest new product in pain relief. RunCatalina.com, the Catalina Eco Marathon just finished this weekend, and the 40th anniversary Catalina coming up on Saturday, March 11th. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we've raised over $80 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport, and you can check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes, and definitely subscribe to our newsletter. Coming up this next weekend, the 25th, 26th, and 27th of November, is the Ultraman Triathlon, the voice of Ultraman. Mr. Steve King joins us. Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, and what a great day it's been all around. I've just seen the results from Arizona here today, so as a Canadian, obviously, I'm thrilled to see what's happened out there.
Yeah, Mr. Lionel Sanders, going faster than any Ironman in history. That's pretty cool.
It sure is, and you look at that 404 and a 242 back end, and then Brent McMahon with a 240. I'm just blown away, and Meredith Kesler, man, what the women are doing these days is absolutely outstanding. And you know, that's a nice segue also to see what's happening in the ultra world, because as you know, this year we have the pleasure of seeing Kate Bevilacqua from Australia taking on the Ultraman, and she's already been a winner overall, beating all the men when she raced in Canada at these distances as well.
So with this three-day event, and we're talking day one, they start with a 10K swim, followed by a 90-mile bike up to the volcano. I think day two is, what, 171 miles
it
out
is,
to Javi? And then the third day is a double marathon back to downtown Kona.
It is, back to the old airport, yes.
Pretty special for it's a different type of athlete to be able to string back-to-back-to-back days like that.
It is, and that's why they have to have crews, as you know. Yeah, well, you guys had crews when you first did your Ironman in 1980, I think it was.
Yes.
You know, so things have changed dramatically, but not when you've got multi-day racing, when the athletes certainly need a crew. And so that's one of the neat things about it is they're all part of getting that person to the finish line. It's not just about the athlete, and the athletes sure appreciate that by the end of the third day.
Performances over the years. You've watched the event in Hawaii for a lot of years. What performances stick out for you?
Well, when I look back over the years, you think of people like Kurt Madden. He was the original men's winner.
Yes.
And Ardis Bo, for instance. It was only a couple of years ago, and we're talking 1983 when they did the event for the first time, and Kurt Madden came back just a couple of years ago and finished in seventh place. And Ardis Bo returns as a volunteer. And so they both won again in 1985. And so they've been right at the front end of the field in terms of taking on these sorts of challenges, and they continue to come back and support others or still race, and I find that phenomenal. And you look who sandwiched between Kurt in 84, that was Scott Molina.
Yes.
And out of the blue, I was in Australia earlier this year, and who turns up to crew for David Nathan but none other than Scott Molina, and he loved it, and he said maybe this is something he's going to take on. You may remember also Stephen Foster, who I think it was 1990, he got third place in the ITU World Olympic Distance Championships when Aussies went 1, 2, and 3, was Stephen Foster was there on a team as well, crewing for someone, and he was the first person to sign up for Australia, the Ultraman, for 2017.
So it started in Kona. It started on the Big Island. How many Ultraman events are there now?
Well, there's now only formally Ultraman Australia and Ultraman Florida, but Ultraman Canada has become what they call it's the same distances, but it's called Ultra Canada 520K right now. And that just has been the last couple of years. But there's also these ultra-distance races that are happening in other parts of the world. They have one in the UK for a couple of years. That is still going as well, but under a different name. They've just had one in Mexico as well. They have one in Spain. So certainly the ultra-distances are out there. And as you know, they've had things like double-deckers going on, the Arc to Arch, and then Uberman, where Giorgio Alessi of Italy became the only person to finish that solo. And I think it was like a 23-mile swim, a 450-mile bike ride, and then running the 135-mile Death Valley event. He did it solo, so there's no end to possibilities for these guys.
Now, Steve, as an ultra guy yourself, did you do Ultraman at some point?
Yes, I did it in 94 here in Canada.
And what was that experience like for you?
Oh, phenomenal. It was one of the highlights easily of my athletic career. I'm a pretty sad swimmer, so I was near the back end of the field on the swim. I did reasonably well. I was third on the bike, and then I won the run. So it went in the perfect order for me, and I came second overall to Nick Mallett of Australia. And, you know, it's something you cherish, and it's one of the reasons I've never done it again, because I know I couldn't go back and have a perfect 3 days again. I had a wonderful crew. My wife was on the crew, and she comes with me to lots of races where I'm commentating, but it's also been nice over the years when she's been part of the crew with other friends there on these multi-day events or long-distance events.
What did you learn from the experience of doing it yourself that helps you when you're commentating on it now?
Well, I think the depth of the mental needs that a person has, as well as putting in, most people have certainly put in the physical work building up to it, the sweat equity, so to speak.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the mental downs, it's how do you get through those dark periods? I mean, anyone who's done Ironman knows that you have dark periods, but you extend that over 3 days, especially if you run into trouble. And we've had people who have had horrendous things they've gotten through. In fact, I was going to talk about blisters and things like that, and I believe there was a gentleman when you did the race, he got blisters from the swim because he had to ran 2.4 miles, if I recall reading one time. But most of the guys, you know, have problems that they have to dig through because it gets tough out there. Day one to me in Hawaii is the toughest day one of any of the courses. As you know, the conditions in the water can be very different.
Yes.
And you've got a current at the end there that can keep people almost in the same location for like 20 minutes or so, literally. We've had those instances. And then you've got potential for, you know, jellyfish stings, that
sure.
sort of thing. But then the very first pedal stroke in Hawaii is uphill, and it goes all the way up to the lava fields at the Volcano Park. And the winds come up, and there are definitely there on day two and three as well. But day one, it's consistently uphill, and you've got darkness, which comes down, as well as some cold weather. And often when we're at the finish line of day one, it's actually raining as well. So a difficult day to get through, and everyone's relieved when that day is out of the way. Last year, we had two athletes literally finish in the last 7 seconds because they're given 12 hours per day, but two athletes finish within 7 seconds of that 12 hours. So thank goodness for that.
When people who've done the Ironman hear about Ultraman, I think the one thing, two things. When they think about swimming from the Ironman swim start to basically the Kona Surf Hotel, or which was used to be the transition area for bike to run, they go, there's no way. The other thing is imagining running back from Javi back to the old airport is something is mind-boggling. It's hot. That course is undulating. When you're out there, does it surprise you that these athletes actually make it through this thing?
No, it doesn't surprise me because it's like the gods call at us for different reasons, you know, whether it's to do our first 5K or whether it's to do a marathon, whether it's to do a half Ironman or an Ironman, and the ultra gods call at you as well. You know, there's something appealing. It's funny, here in Canada, we've got a couple of races that have the word death in them, and it's amazing how many people sign up straight away, simply because they know, hold on, this is calling to me for one reason. I need to go out there and test myself. And then you see people who've done really extreme things as well. As you know, Andre Kalik, for instance, he's now done Australia, he did Canada, and he did the World Championships. And this is a gentleman, you know, a double amputee, below-the-knee amputee. It's amazing to see. And now we've had two blind athletes that have done ultra distances, John DeMandel in Australia and Rafael Jamie, who just did that in Mexico. And you go, it's phenomenal. And people have... There's something that calls them to find out the depths of themselves. You know, how far can they go? How deep can they dig? And because often you hear people say, oh, I gave it 100%. No, you can't. You know, but you never know between 90 and 100% what you've got. And it's only when you've been to these extremes you realize maybe I could have gone one bit more. And that's why you get people coming back. We've got one athlete, Gary Wang. He's doing it for the 16th time, if you can imagine.
And the interesting thing to me is the crew aspect. Because if you have a great crew, that makes a huge difference out there. Mm-hmm. What have you seen from the crews or some of the best crews?
Oh, some of the best crews, they contain usually people who have done extreme things or excellent things themselves. We've seen even Olympians join us, and I mentioned some of the other names. So sometimes that really puts pressure on somebody, the athlete. But on the other hand, you can look at that and say, I've got the best team possible. These people know everything, whether it's about biomechanics, whether it's about nutrition. You know, a lot of people may have a medic on board, but they've certainly got pacers of girl for the final portions of the run. They've got motivators, people who are energized, people who are enthused, and usually friends. But a lot of time, some people go to an Ultraman, and they may not know anybody, but they soon become friends. And so the crew's job is to know the course, number one. And that's a difficult one for first-time crews as well. You know, because your aim is to do the straightest lines on the swim, of course, and we've had people zigzag all over the place in different events. And so that can cause all sorts of grief initially. But you've also got others like local paddlers in Hawaii who do a phenomenal job in getting the swimmers there as quickly as possible. But the crews, yeah. We've had crews go literally off the road in their vehicles. So you never know what's going to happen. So the idea and the wonderful thing about this is the crews tend to support each other. If they notice another crew's in trouble or an athlete needs something and a crew may be delayed for all sorts of reasons, another crew usually jumps in and supports them in many different ways. That's what I love about this. Everyone feels like their family, hopefully, by the end of it because of the support. We always, at the awards as well, have special prizes that are just for the crews to demonstrate, you know, how much it is appreciated.
So one of the athletes, I remember David Goggins, the Navy SEAL from here in San Diego, and his first running event was a 100-miler that he had to do to qualify for Badwater.
Yeah.
And his first triathlon was Ultraman. And he borrowed a bike and did the swim, obviously, and I think he flatted on the bike and broke the wheel and ended up borrowing another bike or renting a bike for the rest of the trip. And do you remember when Goggins came over? I think he ended up finishing second overall.
Well, he had that battle with Ferg Hawk as well. That was a tremendous battle that those guys had there over the years. And, in fact, you know, you may remember there was a film made, The Distance of Truth, and that was about that event as well. And so when you look at what happened there, Ferg and David Goggins, I think David Goggins, being a Marine, he's extremely well-built, as you may be aware. And so the battle was on between those guys, and I think Goggins couldn't believe the size of Ferg Hawk. He couldn't believe he's running with him. And you may remember David Goggins actually won the run portion of the event one time, did like 7:23 for the double marathon.
Yeah.
He's someone else who's one of those people. I mean, you're a Marine, so you know what it's like to dig really deep.
Yeah.
And he certainly was able to do that. And I tell you, when you look at what it takes to be a Marine and you have to start to think, well, you know, how do I transfer that to a race? What one really appeals to me, and for someone like a Marine, I suppose for him he would say, I want the biggest, the baddest, and he went out there. He came second. That was in 2006. That was to Jeff Landau. And as I say, he ended up winning the run portion, so he too went the right way. Had a very strong 3 days. And in fact, it was Gary Wang, the person I mentioned, who was doing his 16th, who was third that year as well. And Ferg Hawk ended up coming second and third over the years at that particular event. We had seen him try to chase each other down. These guys have done Death Valley as well. That's another big event
that
I'm referring to when I said the Distance of Truth. So they, you know, some of these guys didn't know each other going into these races, and they've done other events, and then when they get over there, they test the field, they take a look through. Someone sent me today this chart of everyone doing Ultraman this year and breaking it down to see what they've done elsewhere and how it could match up and how the event could actually unfold. You know, people love to predict what could happen.
So what's interesting with the first Ironman, the first Ultraman, these events start as sort of an adventure. Can we do it? Can we finish this thing?
Yeah.
And somewhere along the line, it becomes a race. There's two people, both of them who want the same goal, have the mm-hmm. same, want the same prize. What's been the closest race where you really didn't know who was going to win the thing till really towards the end?
Well, I think probably 1986 when James Frime and Woody Woodruff.
Yeah.
You remember that was Valerie Silk's husband or partner at the time. And literally, Woody stopped before coming to the finish line to give her a kiss. He lost the race by 5 seconds.
No way! Yeah, he stopped to kiss her and lost the race?
Yeah. So I'm not sure what happened afterwards, between he and Valerie in terms of discussing that. But, you want to show your appreciation to your crew because many people have their crew run up the finish line with them.
Right.
And it's only afterwards when you tally the three, like as the race is unfolding, I'm tallying these things up on day three and, to see what the splits are at the 10K, the half marathon, one and a half, and then towards a finish and what it's got to look like for someone to win. So sometimes we get in a phone call, how much does so-and-so have to take out of this person? I just could not imagine what was going on then for these guys because they may not have been getting splits, but you can imagine when you look at the results afterwards and you go, 5 seconds, if I just had the kiss afterwards, who knows whether it would have made a difference. Yeah.
Do most of the folks who get into Ultraman, do they come from that Ironman background, or is it pretty diverse?
I'd say that nearly everyone has done an Ironman before. Mm. You had the exception there with David Goggins, but pretty much everyone has done Ironman. But some people were very much into it. And then you had people like, you remember Angelica Castaneda.
Absolutely.
And Barbara
Warren.
Alvarez.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, although they had done Ironman, they really came from doing adventure races as well and Death Valley, things like that. And then you had specialists, people like Gary Shields. He was another three-time winner of the event. And then, of course, we had the incredible Alexander Ribeiro, who's a six-time winner in the men's division, and Shanna Armstrong, who was a six-time winner in the women's division. For them, this was their number one event. This is what they peaked for. But recently, we've had people like Hilary Biscay, who set a new record for the swim portion of the event for the women and did a phenomenal job, ended up taking a world title. And so I believe she's now stepped back from the sport. I think she just became
had
a mother.
Had a baby,
so,
yes.
Yeah, exactly. So, and here we are now with a couple of pros in the field that have been pros at Iron Distance, Kate Bevilacqua and Canadian Tara Norton are both in the field and got some great competition amongst the six women there. But again, you don't see too many women taking on the challenge. But the other interesting thing is also that we've seen a 19-year-old finish. He did that at UK, a Mexican by the name of Van Dam Sanchez, just 19. And this year, he just became the race director for the Mexican distance event. So, and then in Australia this year, we saw a 66-year-old, Daryl Allen of Australia, become the most senior athlete. And you're probably aware of Wendy Miner. She actually lives on the Big Island, and she, at 65, became the most senior female ever to finish. So we've been thrilled over the years to see the different countries. We got, I think, 13 countries this year that are going to be represented, and we've only got 31 athletes that are taking on this challenge this year.
So 31. That's But I mean, it's a huge commitment because it's not just you coming over. You got to have a crew. It's expensive undertaking. Plus, it's not like there's big prize money.
No prize money whatsoever. No, which I don't know if you remember years ago, Pam Reed, who won Badwater, officially beat all the men as well.
Yes.
And she was on the David Letterman show. And he said, well, so what do you get at the end of this thinking there was thousands of dollars? And she said a belt buckle, and basically what the guys get is a finisher's shirt and a nice plaque and a result sheet. So, and they're happy, believe me, you come away from something like this because what does it represent for you? It's something you did once in your lifetime, maybe more times, but to do it just once is something very, very special. I doubt very much that you would ever, personally, you're never going to forget 1980 and what you did, with just about 120 people in the field or something.
Yeah, yeah. So who do you look at as the favorites to win this year?
Well, it's an interesting group because you've got two men in the 50-plus division who have been near the top before. Miro Krieger, who's actually won the event, Tony O'Keefe, who's been second and third. But you've also got someone like Iñaki De La Parra, who has won in the UK. He's an excellent swimmer as well. And you've got Rob Gray from South Africa, living in the States, but he won in Florida this year. And then you've got maybe a swim bike specialist as well, Renato Valla from Brazil, very strong swimmer and combined biker. I would see him dropping way back on the run, though, according to what he's done before, because he's quite the big man.
Right.
So when you look at the experience, you've also got Jochen Dembeck. He's coming back. He's a German who's put in a lot of mileage for this, and he's been amongst the top five before. And a gentleman from Australia, Travis Waith, but he goes by Trout. He's done now three before, and he's been like a fifth, sixth, and seventh. And so the experience is building up for him. And then you have to look at locals, too. There's a couple of people from the island that are doing it. Stacey Studer won the women's title last year. So she's in good form. And there is another local, John Howerton. He, again, wants to do well. He loves this race, and he's living for this race. He says this is what he's peaking for. But I would like to see some of the old guards, so to speak, the Rat Pack, as they call themselves, being right up there, because they're going to show the youngsters the way home as well, because they're amongst the best runners in the field. So I would imagine that the battle would be on between De La Parra, Gray, Krieger, O'Keefe. Those would be the people I'd see out there. And there's a couple of youngsters too, Ribeiro, that's no relation to Alexander, but Bernardo Ribeiro, a young man who's raced once before, lots of talent, and I could see him over the next few years really excelling.
This is also, it's not like you're blocking off the island. This is an open road, similar, which is an issue, right? It's something that people have to take into account. The crew is your athlete gets fatigued. He can wobble a little bit or be a little unsafe on the road. How important is that to this? Just that the athlete is being sort of supervised by their crew and making sure that they see problems before they develop.
Yeah, well, definitely on that first and second day, that is the case, especially on the bike. On the bike on day two, you've got the Kohalas to go up as well, and the winds up there have been so severe at times that we've had some athletes knocked off or they walk or they sit in a vehicle till the winds die down, if that ever happens. So certainly, that is something you have to take into account, and some athletes struggled to get through Hilo, and there they've got a bridge there, the singing bridge, because it's often wet and athletes have to be very careful. We had two major accidents last year, Scott McDermott and Christian Isaacson, both very serious. And again, the spirit of Ultraman came through there because other athletes were the ones who stopped, along with crews, of course, to support the athletes. And they've been recovering ever since, and we certainly hope we see those two back in action with us in future years.
You can tell through the phone line that you love this event. That there's these Ultraman events around the world are special, but there's something really special about the one on the Big Island.
Yeah, it truly is. There's people who have been to the Big Island, they know about the special energy that is there, and that I see all sorts of miracles and providence and serendipitous things happening throughout the entire time we're there. It's a constant for me. I just love the place. I love the people. And I love the fact that if you and I were going out for a 5K, we would know roughly what we're capable of doing. Now, people may have some sense of what form they're in, but anything can unfold in 3 days over these distances, over this 12-hour-per-day limit time. We had a gentleman just a couple of years ago who ended up literally finishing on day three. He was a local, and he did the run literally with his team behind him, pushing him over the line at 11:59:59. So Mr. Nixon was one very happy camper, but he paid a big price. Jason Nixon was a local lifeguard in Hawaii, and he showed me some photos there where his groin was all badly bruised up for the longest time there. But I tell you, he probably looks back at that and just thanks the heavens that he was able to do that and have a crew that were looking at the clock as it was ticking down and realized what needed to happen to get him across in time. It was so magnificent.
Steve, thanks so much for taking time. I can't wait to spend a few days with you. Again, Ultraman coming up this weekend. And you know what's always intriguing me, Steve? Over the years, we always looked at Ironman and the longer distance events as, God, they're hard to cover, right? They're hard to capture because they're so long. Well, now with the internet and with social media, it actually is more of a positive to have something that lasts a couple of days because you can keep people's interest over multiple days. Do you see that more and more awareness for Ultraman because of in this day and age, you don't have to go buy a TV contract to cover this. You can do
absolutely.
Things with social media and create excitement around each and every one of these athletes.
Truly. And so, you know, we're forever grateful for people like yourself, Bob, for coming over there, Tim Carlson coming mm-hmm. over there. And you look at the crews these days with Facebook, with Instagram, hashtags all over the place. But we've also got things like Periscope. People
right.
can film and post these things as well, which they do. And you know, in Canada, we've had some live streaming the last few years as well. And that's been great. People have tuned in. They want to know.
Exactly.
And we get a lot of people who say, yeah, that's something I'm going to do one of these days. Well, you never know what's going to happen down the road. So I would say to anyone who's contemplating that, you know, just sign up. The moment you sign up and state it, the moment it starts to draw towards you, and you won't regret it. I mean, there are people who have left with unpleasant experiences, in other words, a crash or something, but many of them have come back and said, wow, you know, I knew I had to dig deep, and anything worth getting that touches you at that level is worth coming back to have another go at, and that says an awful lot about the character that this event draws.
Love it. Steve King has been our guest again. Ultraman coming up November 25th, 26th, 27th. There'll be a ton of coverage online. We'll be doing a lot of stuff on Babbittville.com and on our iTunes show. Again, we are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series by OSCA Wellness. RunCatalina.com, 40th annual Catalina Marathon coming up on March 11th. That's a Saturday. The Challenge Athletes Foundation, we've raised over $80 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on Babbittville or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here.